Hey, Vivek, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Apologies if my signal dips in and out a bit. I was just lining everything up. I had a few tabs open on the desktop, and then my router just cut out. And I've got the Ethernet connection. I'm sat, 2 feet away from the router to try and get the best Wi-Fi. But yeah, it's just perfect timing.
Wow, it sounds like quite the setup experience getting it going.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I rely on the internet heavily for work, so I try and have the best connection possible. And then, it's and it was working fine, literally at 8:58, because it's 9 o'clock now here in the evening in England.
Oh,
But yeah,
jeez.
bang on 9 p.m. it just stopped working. Everything ceased to work. But luckily I've got data on my phone, so I can still tune in. How are things with you?
Wow, it's incredible. I've been thinking a lot. Obviously, there's this meeting every 2 weeks. It's my understanding that this is generally acceptable knowledge to share. Every 2 weeks we have a meeting on that smaller group of there's the two discords. There's the public one, and then there's sort of the smaller, more active one. And every 2 weeks, there are two meetings just based off of everyone's time, one on Wednesday night and one on Sunday afternoon, to kind of account for this difference in time zones that we have as a global movement. You're kind of the case and study of it, Vivek, with being, what's the UK like? Depending on where you are in the US, 6 to 8 hours different, right? And that's, middle of the night for you versus, and so as we think towards a more open source and distributed global developer community, building the future of the tools that we use every day that enable our globe to function, obviously, all the world's talent isn't in one or two time zones. And so I'm excited to have, hopefully I'm saying the name right, and just please do correct me if I'm wrong here. Joaquin, I think, is how it's pronounced in is it should be right. Do let me know if I'm not 100% right on that. A core case study of an independent, centralized, open source software developer working in conjunction. A lot of that technology on Stellar, for instance, is a tool for the world built by global developers. And it's something where the work cannot be done at the same time by the same parties, just like any other, globally distributed free open source software, right? It's about what? It's about anybody can contribute. That means any time zone, any ethnicity, and any experience. And so ideally, we can start to see what that looks like with Joaquin. Am I saying that right?
Hello, can you hear me well?
Yes, you sound stellar.
Yeah, yes. Okay, nice. Thank you. Yes, it's Joaquin. So it's, yeah, kind of right.
Well, thank you for joining us on your birthday, Joaquin. I
Yeah,
understand that you have
no problem.
plans. It was very thoughtful of you to share some of your perspective. Everyone here really appreciates it.
Nice.
For sure, yeah. Thank you so much.
I was listening. You're also in at 10 o'clock right now, right?
It's 9 o'clock.
Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
because I'm in England. We're just 1 hour behind mainland Europe.
Oh yeah, I'm in Berlin right now.
Oh, nice. Yeah, a friend of mine was just there. But yeah, beautiful place.
Nice. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, thank you so much for joining us later in the evening, Joaquin. It is really interesting. You have such an incredible story. Would you mind just telling us a little bit about your journey into blockchain tech and how you became involved with what you're working on today?
Yeah, well, I started on blockchain back in 2018.
Yeah, I started mining, and then I stepped out of crypto because bear market, and I started again my journey in 2020, and learning about Solidity and stepping into programming, into Web3. Before that, I was doing programming in Web2 and other kind of stuff, and got really attracted by Web3. And really fell in love with crypto and blockchain technology.
Really? How did you learn programming to start with your original Web2 developing?
Yeah, I started programming at like 14 years old by hacking my PS3.
I was doing hacks on Call of Duty and things like that at 14, and started programming like that. So that's I've been programming since a long time.
Wow, that's incredible, Joaquin. I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, it's nice.
And what was it about blockchain that originally attracted you into, I guess, mining and then later on development?
I'm just always curious about technology and everything. So it's just curiosity that brought me here. Just being curious about this new technology and new things and then this new kind of money that you can use anywhere. So it's nice. It was really nice.
Yeah. What was it about Web3 that hooked you in? I mean, you learn about it, yes, and then when it comes to wanting to really put a lot of time into it, as it seems you've done, what was the transition like for you there?
I started with a project that was programming to smart contracts on Solidity. Yeah. And I don't know, it was very fun. I don't know what else to tell you about it because it got me attracted, and the community was great, and the technology, and just started there.
Wow, that's incredible. So what are you work? Is that what you're working on now?
No. Right now, we have a development team. It's called Palta Labs.
Uh-huh.
And we mainly work in Stellar. We have a DEX called SoroSwap.
Uh-huh.
Which is the first DEX on DEX and AMM. And soon it's going to be an aggregator in Sorovan, which is the smart contract platform on Stellar. And yeah, we won the hackathon at Consensus for the Stellar track a few weeks ago. So we are now working on DefineDex, which is a set of smart contracts. And the idea is a solution for wallet providers that they can provide their users like a one-click savings account into DeFi protocols, like providing liquidity into SoroSwap, for example, or lending and borrowing protocol, so they can earn yield, but with just one click. So wallets normally have to integrate many different DeFi protocols. If they want to do this, they will have to implement different DeFi protocols. But with our solution, they only have to implement one the smart contract, which is a DefineDex, and with this DefineDex, in only one transaction, they can invest in different DeFi protocols. So what we're doing now. Yeah.
That's incredible, Joaquin. And that is a big win. I mean, congratulations on the 20 grand from the hackathon. Have you done a lot of hackathons before? Has that been a big part of setting it up?
No, to be honest, this is my first hackathon, and another colleague have been in a few hackathons as well, but for me, this is my first hackathon.
Wow.
So it was a really nice experience, really good.
Yeah, well, what was the best part of it for you, Joaquin?
Traveling from Europe to the U.S. for like 4 days to participate in the hackathon was something that I never thought I would do, like just traveling for a few short days somewhere else.
just for that. And
really?
Yeah, yeah. And winning the hackathon, that was pretty nice. Really fun.
Yeah, it was incredible. So this hackathon was sponsored by a number of blockchain protocols. Do you know, for the ones that your other team members have been in before, were those kind of company sponsored, community driven? Are you familiar with kind of the standards that you've seen there?
Do you mean about the other projects that win the other tracks, or about the other blockchains?
Oh, just the members. So, for example, your team that for this last hackathon, really interesting. You're working on an open source solution, if I have that right.
Yeah.
And everything sort of gets published. And one thing that stood out, at least to me, is that not everybody was at the same company, right? There were people. Can you talk a little bit on what that was like, aligning development between different organizations?
Yeah, well, so we worked mainly as our team development. We were three people from our company, and there was another guy from Meru. Meru is a wallet in LATAM, Latin America, which where it uses Stellar in the back end. They implemented our DefineDex inside their wallet for the hackathon. And it was really nice working with him. He was very fast, and we only explained the idea and the project and how the smart contract worked just in one call. And it was really nice. And Meru is a great app. It's great. The focus of Meru is to interact with cryptocurrencies and blockchain without going there and doing it.
Wow. That's incredible. And was there anything about, was Stellar sort of a unifier between you guys? How did you get into Stellar? What attracted you there?
So one of my colleagues, we worked on a project before a few years ago in Avalanche.
Uh-huh.
And he got back to me last year saying that he had a new project and he was looking for developers. So I jumped in. And this is Esteban, by the way. I don't know if you know Esteban.
Yes, Esteban.
But yeah. And so he invited me to join this journey in Stellar, and it's been really nice. We started developing SotoSwap, and now we're developing many other projects, and we are helping other companies as well to create their smart contracts.
Wow, that's incredible, Joaquin. So it's a startup that you guys have really built from the ground up together, is that right?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, one thing I saw, Stellar has a community fund that gives grants to projects, and Palta had a number of them. Were you involved with those grants? Can you tell us what the application, the distribution, the award process was like?
Yeah, well, it's very easy to apply for a grant. Nowadays, is SCF, the Stellar Community Fund, is getting more applications, so it could be getting harder to get a grant. But you just have an idea. You maybe are in the early stage of development. You have to prepare your application form and send it to them. And it's really nice working with them. The community is great. The Discord server is great. Everyone is active. There's a lot of really, really nice people, really intelligent people who is always contributing. And if you have any problems with the stack and with Rust, with building smart contracts, it's great. The people is great. It's a really good community. I really like the community there.
Wow, Joaquin. It sounds like they've been very supportive of your development work.
Yeah, definitely.
Could you tell us a little bit more about what it's been like working with the open community on with Palta versus, it sounds like you had a little bit more of a history working at sort of company organizations of sorts.
Yeah, yeah. A few years ago, I was working in traditional finance. It was an application similar to Rocket Money. Do you know Rocket Money?
Yeah.
You see, I was working in something similar, but for Latin America. I really like crypto. I left that company to work in crypto because I love it, and I love open source. I love open source, not just because of the incentives in Stellar and SCF they give to create everything open source, and also the if you're applying for a grant for SCF, I'm pretty sure the code has to be open source as well. But I love open source in general because you're helping the community, helping someone else, and if anyone is trying to do something or trying to learn something, open source is great for somebody else to learn. And I have learned a lot of things going through open source projects. It's really good. That's why I like open source.
Really? Wow. That's very inspirational, Joaquin. And what are your long-term vision for what innovation could come?
Long-term vision? Well, to be honest, I don't know everything how it comes. I think blockchain technology is going to be there. This is but no doubt to me. And there's a lot of new things going on. And it's really it really motivates me to meet new people and new projects. There are some very innovative ideas. I really like gaming, too. There's a lot of things going on in gaming and crypto. And now there's also AI, and a lot of AI.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how all that. I'm with you there, Joaquin. And on the Stellar Network, what part do you hope that SourceSwap will play in that evolution?
Sorry, what?
Do you think SourceSwap will be a really big part in helping those movements succeed?
I hope to. SourceSwap is needed because from a smart contract, you cannot interact with the Stellar DEX. So you need an AMM and a DEX written in a smart contract inside Sorovan and Stellar. So other smart contracts can interact with the router and make swaps if a smart contract needed. So yeah, I think with time, people will start using more and more this these new things in Stellar, and I think I'm not sure, but I think the Stellar DEX will get less and less attraction with time to prioritize projects like SoloSwap or other AMMs and DEX inside the Sorovan network.
Oh, so it'll be a little more focused on the contract side.
Yeah, because you can do a lot of more stuff with the smart contract now.
You can do a lot more stuff, Joaquin?
Yeah, because Stellar before didn't have smart contracts. So now with Sorovan, you're able to create more complicated applications that leverages these technologies.
Oh, wow. And how important is community feedback for your development and sort of how you engage with users and contributors?
Oh, it's very important. It's very important. You could be developing and testing everything, but there could be a user that comes to you and comes to the Discord chat and say, "Hey, this is not working well, or this could be fixed." And it's really good because sometimes you don't realize what other people can see. So feedback is a priority. It's really nice.
Yeah. Wow. What advice would you give to other developers looking to build in open source?
Just do it. Open every single repository you have in GitHub. I mean, there are some times that you just open source might not be in the scope, but contributing into open source is great. And if you're a developer and you want to, and you are a Web2 developer and you want to jump into crypto, there are a lot of opportunities. There are a lot of things to learn, and it's great. The community is great. There are a lot of grants as well, different in different blockchains. Many blockchains have very nice grants for people to develop.
Wow. Well, on the topic of users, we have Hane in the chat, who I think might have an interesting, similar background to yourself, Joaquin. So I'll ask him to come on up. But in the meantime, can you tell us a little bit more about how you think about what to build in the first place? You've been involved with a lot of projects. And how do you think about, how do you ideate? Are you talking with end users? Are you speaking with the community before you start working? Or do you just sort of jump in and build what you think needs to be built? What's your approach to that, Joaquin?
Lately, asking for things for necessities. We are working very close with wallet providers like Meru and Beans, so we kind of know what they need, and then we start thinking, okay, what can we develop to help them and stuff like that. And many times we also just jump in and do anything to see if it works.
And has that led to some successes in the past?
Yeah. And also to learn, just to learn. It's also a good experience to just develop something, to just learn about it.
Wow. Just to learn about it. Now, if I have this right, Joaquin, it sounds like you're working in Berlin. I saw also maybe you had done some work in Chile. How do you perceive the global blockchain community? And sort of, what do you think?
Hello?
Unique. Hey, how you doing, Hane? Hey, how are you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yes, you sound stellar. Oh, you muted yourself there. There you go.
So you were asking how do I see the whole blockchain community, like from every blockchain, or what was the question?
Yeah, and especially, you know, developers around the world. What do you think on that? What do you think on everyone working together, regardless of borders?
I don't quite understand the question. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Hane might be able to help, but I think he's trying to get on. In the meantime, Joaquin, is there any technical questions I really should have asked you but completely glanced over and forgot to?
Like technical question, I don't think so. I can get very technical sometimes, but I don't think you missed anything.
Well, thank you for sharing your perspective. Where can listeners go to learn more about what you're working on?
Oh, you can go to paltalabs.io and also to sotosop.finance. We have a Discord server that you can jump in and ask questions. And yeah, that's it. And use sotosop.finance. If you are using Stellar, use sotosop.
Wow. Now, if I am hearing you right, it sounds like you might be on the U-Bahn. Are you, Joaquin?
Yeah. I am in the U-Bahn.
You know, I think that it's sort of relevant to what we're working on here with building, like, Stellar is, you know, a public blockchain. It's sort of a public good, you could say. It's spearheaded by a nonprofit. What do you think? Do you think there are parallels between the public transit, the public infrastructure that's across Europe, or like the U-Bahn, for example, that everyone kind of collectively works on? Do you think there's parallels between that and the code that we're developing now?
I never thought about that. But yeah, it's public. It's for everyone. For everyone to use. You just need to pay the gas fee.
Yeah. And what do you think, you know, maybe I'm not sure so much in Europe, but at least here in America, there are a lot of highways and there are toll roads where you can pay and you can get on a special you know, there's no traffic. You have to pay to go on the road, and it's separated from everybody else so that people with money can go faster. Do you see something like that happening on the transit side of things, on the public infrastructure side of things as well? Or do you think it's everybody gets treated the same?
Here in Europe, well, I can't talk too much about it, how the highways work here, because I haven't taken any highway trips. But I can talk about Chile. I'm from Chile, uh-huh. And Chile is the same as in the U.S. You have to pay for the exclusive highways and everything. You have the tolls. It's exactly the same as in the U.S., but it's, but in the U.S. they are larger. They are huge. I've been in Miami, and the highways are huge, huge, huge. But yeah, I cannot speak too much about Europe in that. But the trains are great here.
Wow! Yeah, they're amazing. Really incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can go anywhere at any time, and there are many connections to everywhere. And it's very easy to travel to other countries that they speak other languages. And yeah, I love that. I love learning languages and being around other languages.
It sounds like you're a very interoperable guy.
Kind of, yeah. I would like to learn more languages, though. I just know Spanish and English, and I'm learning a bit of Bosnian. And now that I'm in Germany, I'm trying to learn a bit German, it's a bit difficult.
Yeah. Huh. Well, thank you so much for sharing your birthday with us, Joaquin, especially this late night. It really is nice, incredible. I'll invite Bibik and Hain if they have
no
any
problem.
Questions.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I mean, incredible work that you're doing. What an interesting, unique background. And dare I say, the epitome of what the future of work will look like. Where, I mean, can you tell me, when you first got into crypto, did you have to, like, ask someone for permission to work on what you were doing? Or did you just start coding and put up a new repo? What was that like?
I just heard about Ethereum, and that you could earn money with a computer mining it. I didn't learn much about it, and I just set up a computer, bought a mining rig, and I started mining Ethereum. My mining rig got hacked. I was mining for someone else for like
a
day.
Oh my gosh!
And I didn't. And I didn't know much about it. And that was my first steps into crypto. And I didn't even bought crypto before. I just started mining.
Uh-huh.
And that's how it started. Then I didn't want to hear about it for like 2 years, but because it went down and didn't want it. but yeah, interesting technology.
Wow.
Very interesting.
Well, and given that you're from sort of a similar area, I've got to ask, just this last week or so, last month, when Hurricane the hit in Brazil, they sort of had the most severe climate disaster for a very long time, and it displaced, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And Crypto Stellar, in particular, there was a project that raised over $15,000, did all the donations on chain, and put it towards that humanitarian effort. What do you think about that? Were you following that when that happened?
To be honest, I didn't know that happened. I have to about it.
It's okay. It was Hurricane Katrina in southern Brazil. It's interesting because, you know, there people were donating, the payments could go through, and there was no one in the middle to stop or to manipulate any kind of flow of funds. And so we, you know, it sounds like you're really interested in the free flow of money, if I have that right, and maybe, you know, one day we could have the same thing for code.
Oh, yeah. 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 That was great. Nice.
Well, again, thank you so much, Joaquin, for sharing. Hain is trying to join in. Sometimes there's some tech challenges on the platform, but it's really great. And it sounds like you have the experience as well, working with Viewpoints, just meeting people online. Have you met a lot of the people that you work with, a lot of your coworkers? Are they from online, or do you see them in person beforehand?
Are you asking me or Hain?
Yeah, go ahead, Joaquin.
Most of them, I've known them online. Just recently, at Consensus, I met one of my coworkers in person.
Uh-huh.
That was very fun. But mostly online. Yeah.
Hello. Hello.
Hey. Hey.
Hey. Oh. Finally.
Seriously.
Yeah, I think it was Opera GX that I was using Opera GX, and that was causing some problems. So hi, hi everyone. I'm an end user, right? So I'm not gonna be very technical. I'm gonna give you a bit of my background, Joaquin. So I'm not much into crypto, as much as I'm into kind of decentralized autonomous organizations. Thanks to John. We came to a kind of non-profit to help investors. So that's why I think we are coming into blockchain. So yes, that's kind of my summary. So yeah. I don't know if you want to go into the topic of decentralized autonomous organizations, DAOs, or am I kind of changing the subject to suddenly.
I mean, I think, we can definitely talk about DAOs as well. Like, it all ties in with the open source tech and a lot of what Joaquin's talking about, even though it wasn't strictly about DAOs, but it's the same kind of principle, isn't it?
Right, sorry. Joaquin, you there still?
Yeah. Yeah.
So hi. Sorry. I'm gonna go into.
I wanted to ask you. What do you do in this decentralized autonomous organization? So it's a DAO, but it's not in crypto. It's not in a smart contract.
I guess it's still kind of in the. What's the name of the blockchain, John? Or Joaquin, Stellar, right? So it's in the Stellar infrastructure.
Oh, nice, yeah, Stellar.
Yeah. So, I believe the structure is there to support a company, I guess, another project of John's, but at the same time we're kind of taking into the non-profit for governance, right? So I guess that's kind of my take on blockchain technology for now. So besides that, John sent me some articles yesterday, and I guess my take is I've been thinking it's hard for an end user to understand blockchain, I guess in the same way a developer does. I've been thinking, I can't stop thinking that thinking that blockchain is just money, virtual money. So I guess the question is how how profoundly mistaken am I about crypto right now? Just thinking about that crypto is just money.
I don't think that crypto is just money. It's many different things. It can be money, and you can do a lot of things with it. But it's also a technology that with blockchain you have like a immutable database that you can use for many other things. For example, if a company has a backend, you can use the blockchain as the backend for the whole company. So it's not just money and not just meme coins and not just a dog and not just NFTs with pictures on them. It's a technology that you can use for many things. One example can be for gaming. In gaming, you can have imagine you're playing like an RPG game. You have like a sword that you have killed with it like 1,000 people, and the sword level ups. Mm-hmm. And all of this tracking can be done through blockchain technology. So the sword can be an NFT that has like a level tracking, and then you can sell the where I'm going into money again, but you can sell the sword and have different items online. But there are many things that you can do with blockchain that are not just money.
Yeah.
I don't think that was a good example because I got into NFTs and selling. But
no, yeah, but thinking of the backend, I guess it opens a bit more technicals, I guess. It's kind of like software and support for a company.
You can have you can have a whole thing working without even paying for a server. You can have your front end on IPFS, mm-hmm. and you can have the back end fully on blockchain, so you're not paying for servers and you're not paying for databases, and you're paying the gas fees when you use the blockchain. That's how you maintain the server.
Mm-hmm. Well, that helps a lot. And what is your take on security for crypto?
It's very secure, but it depends on what you do. You could be signing a malicious smart contract and losing all your money. But that depends on what you do. It's as secure as what you do with it.
It can be very secure as well. You just need to be conscious about what you're doing in blockchain. By the way, where are you from?
I am from Chile.
Oh, nice. Nice. Come on, Seth.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I think when John told me we had a Chilean guest, I don't know, I felt it, you know, I really felt it.
Nice. How did you get into crypto?
Well, yeah, I'm kind of by luck, really, by happenstance, but yeah, as I was telling you, the guys here, John, Vivek, Bill Ware, I believe you both as well, we all kind of came together because we saw a problem in the stock market, and we end up in the necessity of or the need to kind of decentralize our investments. So yeah, we kind of end up in the need to step away from the
implement blockchain and,
the stock market and yeah. And into the right into the we're just starting the blockchain path thanks to Jun. So, but yeah, it's kind of scary, really. It's kind of scary the thought of that you have to escape, so to speak, the stock market, kind of in fear for your investment, right? So yes, I guess. Looking forward for blockchain is it's kind of the hope, you know. Is it blockchain gonna provide that safety?
Succeed and be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
think blockchain is gonna be there.
I hope.
Which coins? I don't know which coins, but it's gonna be there. The technology is gonna be there.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yesterday John sent me some articles about blockchain, and I think the infrastructure is there, you know. As I told you, I think security is a bit of it's an issue right now, but I don't know if it's gonna be an issue in the future. I hope no, certainly. I don't know if it's because it's just too novel, right? It's just too new and there's a large incentive to just make money. It's not about the infrastructure. It's not about the service to provide. Yeah, it's sadly for some people it's just about.
Yeah, I think the reason for that is that it is a huge opportunity to make money. It's very volatile. When a market is very volatile, it is a huge opportunity to make money.
Mm-hmm.
When everyone comes to crypto, when the whole world is going to be using crypto without knowing it, it is not going to be volatile. It's going to be stable. It's going to be a stable market, and there are not going to be that many opportunities to make a lot of money. And then with now, crypto is like the .com era back in the 2000s when there was Facebook and Google and all of these tech companies.
there was a huge opportunity to invest in the stock market for this for people that are now 40 something. It was a huge opportunity for them to invest in this, in the dot-com era. And now it is the same thing for crypto, but a few decades later.
Yeah.
So that I there are a lot of opportunities to make money, and there's a lot of scams as well. And that's the dangerous part, because there are a lot of scams. If you go into Twitter, and if you go to a known person, crypto influencer, they have 10 other accounts with the same name talking about some token or meme coin or a cheat coin that is going to rug pull all of your money. So you have to be cautious. You have to be cautious. You have to know that there are scams, and you have to be looking for them.
Yeah.
To not get involved in them.
Let me ask John. John, what? What do we mean with permissionless innovation? Are we talking about contracts or kind of taking the freedom away from the legacy system?
So I'm really glad we have Joaquin here to also add on any of the thoughts that I might have, because it seems like we both stem from a similar route on this particular topic of permissionless. If you think about the world today, and I'll stick with software, but you can sort of extrapolate what I'm saying to a lot of industries. If you think about software development today, it's not like you can just go, and I'll give an example of the platform that we're on, just because we've had some weird glitchy things with these spaces before. And you know, it's nothing against the platform itself, but it's just like there are some things that, you know, you and I might notice that a very, very busy engineer at X might not notice. For instance, even though this is a very modern app platform, for some reason, if you post a draft on your mobile phone and you save it, it doesn't show up on your computer, even though it's the same account. That's something that's very trite to resolve. It's not like the craziest thing where you need to spin up a ton of backup servers. You're already saving the data. You just need to sync the data from mobile to desktop. It's like pretty basic thing any kind of rudimentary software engineer could do. And yet X, which has been sold for billions and billions, tens of billions of dollars, right? For some reason, it's not on their roadmap. It's not something that interests them as a private company that they want to do. In an open source world, you could see the entire code base for this platform. You could create on GitHub a fix that solves this syncing problem, and you could just code it up on your laptop, commit the changes to the master on GitHub, and as long as X approves it in this example, that becomes part of the production code base, that becomes part of the platform, and that becomes a reality. That becomes a fix to something that, you know, billions of people, I don't know how people use this platform, but, you know, a lot of people use, right? And that's all possible because you didn't have to go. And in this particular example, you didn't have to fly to San Francisco, do a job interview with Elon Musk or whoever, and, you know, go through all the HR paperwork, legal headaches of hiring an engineer. Instead, you could just write the code, it gets approved, and then that becomes a product. An example that comes to mind in the financial realm is Thinkorswim. Seen some talks and spoken with in the industry a lot of people around this. For those that are not familiar, Thinkorswim is a trading platform. It's sort of like on the Stellar, you might think of like Stellar Term. It's sort of like that. It's just that it's a front-end interface for trading in the stock market. And anybody that trades for a living, they trade with Thinkorswim or something that's extremely similar to Thinkorswim, because Thinkorswim is just flat out the greatest interface for active traders in the stock market. Thinkorswim was created by a private company using seed funding from an asset management firm. They put millions of dollars into this platform and dominated Wall Street completely, the number one, the sole most popular trading platform for active investors in the early 2000s. Then at the peak of the time, because they had investors, they sold to TD and became part of now the umbrella of products there. And it's so interesting because Thinkorswim was originally seen, and even when it was bought for $375 million, TD said, this is nothing, you know, this is so silly, we're paying way too much for this, and it's just a silly piece of software, this trading interface that you have. And yet, it stole all of their, everyone went to Thinkorswim, which at the time had its own brokerage with it. Everybody started using it just because the interface is really good. And I did the same thing when I started trading. TD commissions for $6 to $8, and I would pay him just so I could use Thinkorswim, or I would use Thinkorswim for analysis, and then I would trade it on my phone or something. It's when I got sucked into the trap of using Robinhood, and it's all because if you build something that's really unbelievably good, it can become a standard across an entire industry. But in the case of Thinkorswim, this is where the proprietary nature of the software is a challenge. It is not ideal. Richard Stallman is the one who sort of started this idea of free software and founded really an entire sector of the industry, all based around this idea that the code that we build should be available for the community to use. It should be something that humanity can benefit from, not for a single for-profit company to extract value from, but instead a public good that can be made available for everyone to benefit from, so we don't waste time and effort building 5 versions of Twitter when we could just have 1 open source version, right? Everyone could work on that single standard. And this is what you see with, for instance, Goldman Sachs open sourcing their data analysis infrastructure and donating it to a nonprofit open source software foundation. These are projects, think of the GNU Linuxes of the world, that are fundamental pieces of shared infrastructure. It doesn't matter what cloud computer you're using, it's all running on Linux. These are tools that everybody can use, and they become exponentially better, not because there's a single monolithic company behind them, but because they're available for anyone to view, learn from, and improve at any time through transparent and public platforms available to everyone, not just a select few employees at the oligopic companies of sorts. And while you might not extract value, rents, and monies per se directly from the open source infrastructure, you can build things on top of them that are worth so much more than the sum of the parts. IBM comes to mind as someone whose entire business model at the turn of the century was threatened by open source operating systems, and they pivoted into hiring full-time engineers just to work on open source software, and now that's where a vast bulk of their business is. It's built on the tools, the foundations of these open source platforms, just like how, let's take it now into the development life cycle. In crypto, you can spin up a mining rig just like Joaquin did, just like I did, just like a lot of people that get into this development do. They think, oh, I'm good at computers. I can make money on this magic internet money. Let's learn about this. A lot of my friends ran mining rigs, even ASICs, off of the electric power at Georgia Tech in the dorm rooms. And they would build, you know, full exhaust systems just for their mining rigs. And that's because there is nobody that dictates if you can mine Bitcoin, if you can submit a pull request to Bitcoin, if you can build some sort of infrastructure on top of it or do community work on top of it, just as one example. It's open for anyone at any time to do anything with, whether that means copying the entire project and calling it Dogecoin, or whether that means putting together an improvement that fundamentally brings it to the next level, like Protocol 20 and Stellar. There are incredible avenues, I believe, we can all go towards when we just stop arguing about competition so a few companies can make an unbelievable amount of money, and instead we just think of it from an engineering perspective on how do we get the best system available for the long term, no matter where you're from, at any time. Does that make sense, Hane? Do you agree? Are you? What do you think on that, Joaquin? And thank you again for sharing so much of your time with us this evening.
That is so true. Everything needs to be open source. And also about blockchain technology, something that cannot be stopped by anyone.
I remember Stallman had a computer he was working on at MIT, and it was his big inspiration was that, you know, there was some bug in the software. It wasn't printing. The printer wasn't working right. So he fixed it and he sent it to the publisher and asked them to let him change the software so he could implement this little fix. And they said no, they denied him because it, you know, it affected their modus operandi of generating profit. And it's just silly to think that we can't change obvious challenges and fix, improve, better something that everyone uses just because a couple of people might not make as much economic rent.
This reminds me of something closer to my industry. There's a thing going on with TVs and screens where you can get the high dynamic range. So you get a much brighter light ends and then much darker shadows. And there are two standards across the globe for HDR on your screens. And one of them is open source and one of them is completely private. And the completely private one is Dolby Vision, and it's owned by Dolby, the people who invented surround sound and all that good stuff. And they generated, yeah, Dolby Vision, which was fantastic and had a really high standard and quality to it off the bat. And if you wanted it on your TV or screen, you had to pay Dolby a license. Whereas the open source version, it's called HDR10. It kind of started off a bit rougher, but it is now the only HDR standard I see on any screen and TV. And it's also come wow. such a long way since its inception. It didn't have quite as smooth a start as Dolby Vision, which had, you know, millions and millions behind it. But nowadays it is much more stable, much more supported, much more accepted. And yeah, you don't have to pay an obscene license for it to have it on every individual screen you manufacture. So it benefits everyone, from the user to the manufacturer to, you know, the creators having their content put on these screens. So yeah, it just goes to show the value of open source. And I'm sure it's a global community working on that as well. Because you need that kind of, that many perspectives, whether it's blockchain or, you know, stuff that you're watching on your TV. This kind of technology needs this many brains on it if it wants to be pushed forward at the rate that we're going, you know, as our technology continues to improve across the board. So, yeah, it was just, yeah, that totally reminded me of that. And I think, yeah, in the long term, open source is always going to win.
The other thing about open source is that anyone in the world can jump in and develop something and contribute to the project and to anything. And that is great. If you're using a tool and it happens to be open source and you need a feature, you can just develop it and do a pull request and it might get approved and have your feature is adapted where you're using. And that's great. Open source is awesome.
Yeah, I think as John mentioned earlier as well, you know, the engineers on X compared to the users of X see very different things. And it's something that we even experience with the websites we've created and the Discord servers we run. Like, the, you know, seeing it as a moderator or an admin is very different to seeing it as a first-time user. And getting that kind of feedback and input is invaluable because it's so hard to see, you know, the wood for the trees sometimes when you're so used to it. You kind of take certain levels of information for granted. And yeah, having fresh perspectives come in and help refine that is just, yeah, it's always going to make it so much stronger as a product or platform. Yeah, it just it seems to benefit everyone so much. And like you say, anyone can get involved across the world. I imagine it democratizes access to this kind of stuff as a career or even just a hobby. But yeah, the developmental aspect of it would be fantastic for anyone. And almost, you know, you don't need a flashy MacBook Pro with the fastest processors in it in order to be able to write some code. Anyone can do it, and probably people can even do it from their phones now. I'm so out of the loop with it all, but it wouldn't surprise me at all. There's people writing up GitHub codes on their phones and submitting pull requests on the go from the train or whatever. It's it's an exciting time for it.
From the train.
Yeah, I've seen people renting virtual machines on the cloud and developing all virtually. You just need an internet connection, not even a good computer, or even from the phone. You're using Beam and developing through the cloud to a cloud server.
Yeah, of course, cloud computing. Adding to that extra democratization and accessibility of it all. I always forget about that. I'm so old school with my computer. I need all my processing power local. But it is, yeah. Like, yeah, anyone can jump in. You don't even need, the newest stuff at all. You can just, rent a little bit of processing power from the cloud. It is, yeah. Just such an exciting time for all these kind of developments. It does make me feel like we're on the right track, and all roads are going to lead to this kind of decentralization and democratization of the internet and technology in general. So I think unless John, you had any more questions to ask, or Hayne, or we're coming up to the end now. We don't want to keep Joaquin up too late. but it's been a great talk about permissionless access and innovation. I think there's lots to think on, lots we can hopefully apply when it comes to working on our own. Open source, permissionless kind of blanking on the word. Until it's getting late. But just, you know, to organize, to whatever DAOs help with. Oh god,
the hours are seen, are they getting to you?
It usually gets towards the end of the hour, and I'm like, oh, there's always a word I'm trying to search for something, and it eludes me. But all the kind of stuff we're hoping to do with DAOs and organize everything, and I'm so stuck on this word. But and I mean, it's another part of blockchain technology that isn't to do with money. It's the kind of smart contract side of things, the word is getting, it eludes me.
Well, language certainly is tougher, especially in a world with so many of them. It's interesting. Might we kind of wrap up on that, Mark? Joaquin, what do you think? Do you think that if, say, we're all in this utopian world where we're all building software together and it's all free, it's open, and it's the global standard, take Stellar, for instance, you know, the whole thing, like all the code base, right? It's dare I say, it's mostly in English. I mean, have you seen that? Can you agree with me on, are you with me on there, Joaquin?
I didn't quite understand well the question. So you said that all the code base is in English, and you're always programming in English. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Do you think that's the future?
it's been always been like that, and I don't think it's gonna change. I think English is like an international language, and coding in English is how it's been. I don't know if there are any programming languages that are in other languages, like not English, but yeah, I think it's gonna be like that, unless you're programming in binary.
Well, I mean, I've seen, and it's weird. It's really weird when you see it, but I've seen people like code in Japanese, and it's like, is there any interoperability if you do that? I don't think so. I think it needs to be another one language. Have you seen, I mean, you work in a space, there's a lot of people doing a lot of really incredible work south of the States on in South America in particular, and they're doing, you know, a lot of great work trying to educate people in Spanish. Do you think that ultimately developers, not end users, but developers all kind of coalesce down to English, or are there other options?
I think it's going to be in English. Or I don't see a world where you're coding, programming in another language.
Maybe with large language models, maybe the barrier drops.
Oh, that's a good point, Hank. Good, very good point.
Fixing all the infrastructure needs as well. I guess you could have a programmer coding in any language, and the LLM can translate it for you. I guess it's an option if the need arises.
Maybe so.
Hey, John. I just got to my destination. I will have to leave. But thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I think it's about time to wrap up. Thank you so much for sharing, Joaquin. It's been incredible and
yeah,
so knowledgeable.
Yeah, no problem. Hasta luego. Ciao.
Ciao. Keep doing awesome stuff.
Thanks.
Ciao, ciao.
That was great.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, super educational. Very interesting.
Yeah.
And nice guy as well.
Yeah.
But it seems like there's a lot of positivity in the open source community.
Oh, yeah.
Always good vibes.
Well, if there's any community I think could take down Wall Street, that's the one.
For sure. Lots of self-starters, lots of self-motivated people, all who want to make a change and have the means to do it. It's what we love to see it. But yeah, I think that's a good time for us to wrap up. And yeah, another great episode for the books. I'm gonna come back and nab the recording for this. Hopefully we can get those linked to the show notes of where to get Joaquin and his projects. And yeah, looking forward to the next week. And I think Chavez will be back on for next week as well. So yeah, curious to see what he's got loaded up after a few weeks off. And yeah, I hope you guys and everyone listening has a great week ahead. And we'll reconvene next week for another episode of Taking Stock.
Okay, see you next week. See you next week, guys.